This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Our form of democracy requires a free press. The founding fathers knew this and enshrined the principle in the First Amendment of the Constitution. A free press, acting as a check on unbridled power and looking into the workings of our duly elected officials, is one of the cornerstones of our way of life. It is fundamental to the success of the United States as a country. But the press, and that means all media, has fallen on hard times. Shifting economic paradigms in the dawn of the digital age have removed the bedrock underpinning print journalism, even as electronic media have become siloed and other forms of news dissemination have proliferated. We've also seen the rise of an alarming amount of news being consumed, the veracity of which is questionable at best. I'd call that fake news, and it is. The trouble is the mainstream media has been labeled fake news by the president, and that label has stuck with his followers. What is the impact of this attack on one of the pillars of our democracy? How do we function as a society if no one believes the news they read or see or hear? How do we function if we only believe news that reflects our own preconceived set of beliefs? And how deeply does this distrust of news sources go? Is distrust only with the national media, or are local news outlets suspect as well? And to be fair, are the charges of fake news being leveled against traditional forms of news in any way fair? Is there a scintilla of truth to the charge? We look into all of that this hour with four people who admittedly have skin in the game. Sherry Chisenhall is executive editor and vice president of news at the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back.
Good to see you.
Eric Spanberg is senior staff writer at the Charlotte Business Journal. It's only Thursday and he's here a day early. Couldn't wait to get here. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Glenn Birkins, also here from Friday's show, migrated from the Charlotte Observer to become editor and publisher of his own company, QCityMetro.com, his own news source or outlet. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And David Borax also ran with his own news organizations in the Huntersville, Davidson, Cornelius area and is now a reporter for WFAE News. Second time this week. How do you?
Yeah, hello, Mike.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter @CharlotteTalks. You can also watch us this morning on Facebook Live. And I want to start by mentioning that the Levine Museum of the New South will be holding a discussion about this tonight at 7 called Nothing Fake About It, Responsible Reporting in a New Media World. Observer publisher Ann Calkins will moderate, and Lisa Wharf, assistant news director at WFAE, will be among the panelists. Let me start this discussion with the question I asked in the opening. Is there a scintilla of truth to the charge that the mainstream media, and that would include everyone sitting at this table this morning, including the New York Times and the Washington Post and CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN, NPR, is there a scintilla of truth that we produce fake news? Let me start with the newspaper people.
Well, I'm going to say no, obviously, but you know, obviously there have been a few times in history where major media outlets have had stories that turned out to be not true, but we can point maybe 2 to 3 cases, and that's it. I mean, generally everyone sitting here is very focused on fact-based reporting, multiple sources, knowing who those sources are, which is very different from really, truly fake news that's misinformation or disinformation.
And David, you're with our station, which is affiliated with NPR, and NPR has been called liberal by conservatives, not all, but some conservatives. I don't think we're liberal. I think we're just out there bringing facts. But we live in an age where there are facts, and then there are alternative facts. So does NPR produce fake news?
Absolutely not. I think we hold to traditional professional news standards, which is, you know, multiple sources for things, being really careful about what we do. I would not say there's any fake news on NPR. Now, I think, and maybe we can talk some more about this, I think the problem that we're in right now is that people confuse commentary with news. And, you know, there are things said on if you watch the talk shows all day long on the cable channels, all kinds of information is brought into those. Some of it is accurate. Some of it isn't. I think one of the issues that the president has is he watches a lot of that. And a lot of that is just chatter. It's not news. To me, there's a line between the commentary that you hear all day long and the reporting-based news that you get on news outlets like The Observer or WFAE.
Well, I was going to ask about that because is MSNBC or Fox or both, are they purveyors of fake news?
Well, I think just to start, sometimes it depends on what program you're watching on which network.
Well, it is true that in the daytime, if you watch the news wheel in the daytime on Fox and MSNBC, allegedly they are doing straight news. You watch them at night, that's when all the stars come out, literally.
Right.
The Hannitys of the world, the Chris Matthews of the world, et cetera. And they are not necessarily factors.
And I think and we're going to hear this through this conversation and I think every debate about this, nuance seems to get lost so quickly. I mean, I think back to when I was in college 8 million years ago and Rush Limbaugh made his – you know, his big national push, and people immediately began to confuse Rush Limbaugh with news and news stories. And
Rush Limbaugh, I just want to be clear about this, because I've interviewed Rush Limbaugh, and in that interview he told me, I'm not a journalist.
Entertainer.
He's an entertainer.
Right.
He was a disc jockey, for crying out loud.
Yeah, and I'm not even really picking on him. I'm just talking about, you know, people tend to blur those things, as David said, and so I think it gets confusing in a hurry. And also, MSNBC and Fox, let's just take those two. They're often used as sort of North Pole, South Pole. I think there are even varying degrees in terms of the partisanship within those two networks. So it gets tangled in a hurry, and if I make one point, it would be for the consumer to be really careful vetting what they read and what they watch and
the
veracity
of it. But the people – how do you vet? Because people on the right look at the New York Times. They look at the Washington Post. They look, and Glenn, you've worked at newspapers before you owned your own company. You know what newspapers' hoops are jumped through to make sure the stories are accurate, and people simply don't believe that they're accurate. They don't believe you because it's in print under your masthead, and your masthead is liberal or it's conservative. I don't believe it.
Well, I think that's unfortunate. I think print publications to some degree have contributed to that because they're not as transparent as I think they should be in some ways. Long time ago, a million years ago, like Eric, when Knight Ritter owned the Charlotte Observer, I suggested once to a Knight Ritter executive that the editorial pages, as we know them, be done away with. Because I think editorial pages, as they consist currently, are confusing to readers.
Why? They've been there for hundreds of years. Why don't we know how to use the
You're absolutely right. Page? But in the past, newspapers were identified as liberal or conservative.
Right.
In the past, if you read a certain newspaper because that paper leaned left, leaned right, leaned center, whatever. Today, we have corporate ownership. We're saying that we're totally objective. We're unbiased. But at least every election cycle, we endorse candidates. Mm-hmm. Typically, we will either endorse Republicans loyally or we will endorse Democrats loyally. And I think that's confusing. I would not get rid of commentary. I would just get rid of the fact that the newspaper itself is taking a position on certain
issues.
We're going to
talk a lot about how muddy the waters can get, particularly for uneducated. And by that, I don't mean uneducated people, but people who are not media savvy can get. And they simply don't believe that if the Observer endorses all Democrats or they endorse all Republicans for a particular election cycle, that that's not filtering into the news pages. I know that you will say there's a firewall and that firewall keeps the opinions of the editorial writers on the opinion page, but it doesn't leak into the news pages. But how do I know that? Because Sinclair Broadcasting, we don't have a Sinclair station in this area, but they are buying up stations around the country, and they mandate certain things get covered, and they mandate that editorials and commentaries that they produce at their home office are carried on all of these stations around the country, and it looks like it's coming from that station. So they're muddying the waters, too. So how do I know that the newspaper I'm reading is not dictating their editorial opinions in the coverage of the news columns?
Well, this is a question I get all the time. And at The Observer, the opinion function is entirely separate from the newsroom. And I say to people, generally, I see the editorials when you do. At the same time, after they're published, editorial page staff do not sit in on news meetings, that the opinions of the editorial board don't even touch people in the newsroom.
Why do we care about your opinion?
You know, like you said, it's been hundreds of years since there's been an opinion page, but I do think it is incredible that people still today can't – they don't understand how to separate the two.
But if it's muddying the waters and it's leading to charges of fake news being accepted by vast swaths of the population and it's filtering down even to local newspapers, why not just eliminate the editorial? Who cares what you think? I don't mean to be mean.
No, but I mean, obviously,
if that's muddying the waters and making your job more difficult, take it away.
Well, you can't just stop doing things because they're difficult. Sometimes the right thing to do is difficult to do. So difficulty alone doesn't say stop doing something. Obviously, from the readership we see, there is a huge interest in what the editorial board has to say, in what one of the primary news outlets, if not the primary news outlet in the city,
because,
has to say about an issue.
Because you're more educated, because you're more into the news every day, you're following more. It's your job to follow it, so you have a better opinion of it than the guy reading the paper?
Well, I wouldn't say a better opinion. I would say an opinion. And that doesn't mean that 10 readers who call about an editorial somehow had a lesser opinion.
Glenn, I think you used to work for the editorial board, didn't you?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. I want to reiterate what Sherry said. I've worked for a lot of different newspapers, and not once has any editor come to me and said, you need to lean this story this way or you need to tilt it that way. I have never had an instance in which the views of the editorial board infiltrated into my work, or I saw where it infiltrated into any reporting in the newsroom. So Sherry's absolutely right there. So the problem isn't that the editorial content filters into the newsroom. I think it's just confusing to readers now much more than it might have been when newspapers were more transparent about their biases.
And I'm going to second what you said. I've never had anybody in a newsroom, and I've worked at newspapers, radio, TV. I've never had anybody tell me what I should say as far as things go politically. But I can't tell you how many times I've had readers or listeners or viewers say, well, your paper is supporting so-and-so, and having to explain to them the difference between the editorial page and the rest of the news operation is really difficult.
Well,
and I think we're in an era right now when we should be, as Glenn did earlier, question the idea of whether we should be going in that direction and having a company position on things.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily get rid of the editorial board. I would like to experiment with something that would kind of work like a Supreme Court. You would have liberals, you would have conservatives, and when it's time to take a position on an important issue, they would vote. The majority would write the majority opinion, but the minority would also come back and write a dissenting opinion. And you would give people different views. It's not the newspaper's views. It would be the views of the majority of that board with perhaps a dissenting opinion if the dissenters choose to write one.
But you just mentioned having conservatives and liberals on your editorial board. Well, that means there are conservatives and liberals who are reporters. So how do you filter out the bias that all of us have, one way or the other? How do you filter that out in the news part of the papers and television and radio? And
well,
I only have 30 seconds.
Well, I think the quick answer is most reporters are pulling for the story, not for one side or the other. And I know a lot of people roll their eyes, but it's true. You want the best story and the most balanced factual story you can get.
All right, so we'll come back and talk about that, because I think that's important, because everybody brings their own bias into things. How do you make sure, who makes sure, that all sides are considered? It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Chesterbrook Academy, dedicated to preparing children academically, socially, and emotionally for elementary school, hosting an open house on Saturday, January 20th. Details at chesterbrookacademy.com. And Southminster Retirement, featuring custom-appointed cottages and apartments, and the new Southminster Terraces, providing a full continuum of care in the heart of South Charlotte. Southminster, life with purpose. Info at southminster.org. Tomorrow's Friday. That means the local news roundup. Unanimous decision by the Fourth Circuit Court sends the legislature scrambling again. The court gives them 2 weeks to redraw congressional districts declared unconstitutional, and the clock is ticking. The opening date for the expansion of light rail, that clock is also ticking. It's about to open to the university. We'll talk about that. And the Panthers season is over. Two coaches get dismissed, and the team goes on the block. All of that and more on the local news roundup tomorrow at 9.
I'm Ray Suarez. Coming up on the next On Point, President Trump lays out his plan to boost agriculture and prosperity in rural America. What's at stake is more than a hill of beans. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
That's On Point this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte talks with Mike Collins on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, along with Sherry Chisenhall, Executive Editor, Vice President of News for the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg, Senior Staff Writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, Glenn Birkins, Editor and Publisher of QCityMetro.com, and David Borax, Reporter for WFAE News. How do you keep bias? We're talking about fake news and how it has touched, if it has touched, local news. It certainly touched the national media, the allegations of fake news. How do you keep bias out of the reporting, whether it's on television, radio, or in newspapers, because all of us are biased in one way or the other. And the bias shows up not only in who we choose to quote or the stories that we want to follow, but it shows up in the words we use. So how do you keep it out?
Well, I think all of this is so subjective. You do the best humanly possible to keep it out. I mean, that's really the answer.
And who does that? The editor?
The editor, the reporter, everybody that's –
But not all news organizations have editors. We have them at WFAE, but there are radio newsrooms that don't have them.
And that's why this is, I think, so confusing for readers and viewers now, because we have all these different sorts of media all jumbled together. And by the way, we're reading 280 characters and going from one thing to another. So there are all these colliding forces that are making it, I think, more difficult than ever to be a savvy media consumer.
I think it starts with training and professional standards. And, you know, those of us who've been around for a while came up through a news industry where all of that mattered. You know, you got hired based on a resume that showed you can do this, that you had training in it. You've shown your work from somewhere else. You know, we're people who have spent our lives doing this.
But does that
matter? We hold ourselves to those standards.
But does that matter anymore? Because we're being accused.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're being accused of being fake. The New York Times is being accused of being fake. Breitbart's not being accused of being fake, and they'll be the first to tell you that they'll hire anybody off the street as long as their opinion conforms to the opinion of the publication.
Back to the idea of what is news and what is commentary. I mean, we were talking offline just a minute ago about everybody knows what they get when they go to Slate or Breitbart News. But, you know, let's go back to the definition of fake news. I think there's really two things. One is the label that's been placed on the news media by President Trump and other leaders. Even other world leaders now are picking up on this and labeling stories that they don't like in their hometown media as fake news. That's one thing, but it's also fake news that is produced specifically by people for certain political aims, as we saw during the campaigns with websites popping up, posting stories about everything from Hillary Clinton's campaign as running a pedophile ring out of a pizza parlor in Washington, stories like that, which are patently false, but some people want to believe them. And so you've got those two things. I mean, the latter one does not happen in a newsroom that has standards, codes of ethics. I grew up following the SPJ, Society of Professional Journalists, code of ethics, and it's very strict about what we can do. NPR has a code of ethics. Most news organizations have their codes that they live by and enforce.
But here's the problem is I think of the BuzzFeed story right after the 2016 election where they had analyzed the last 3 months of campaign coverage, and the top 20 fake news stories got wider distribution than the top 20 legitimate news stories. Okay, so that's what's going on here. That's what all of us are fighting. I certainly agree with everything you're saying, David. I think everyone around this table, there are a ton of good reporters in Charlotte and everywhere else. But when you have that going on, it does muddy the issue, and it makes it much easier for people to sort of demagogue the media as fake and artificial and propagating things that aren't true. And that's what we're fighting every single day.
These accusations, these allegations of fake news that come from the president on down, are they strictly, do you think, for political gain, to stir up the base who already believes stuff coming from Fox and Rush and Sean Hannity, et cetera? Or is there something deeper going on here, agenda going on here to really undermine, undercut, and get rid of mainstream media that reflects the actual truth?
I think part of what this is sort of a version on steroids of what is always going on on a lot of sides, not just politically, but in various realms, business, sports, whatever you're talking about, which is to intimidate the media, to diminish what they do, to make them a little more fearful of going after difficult topics, to reduce transparency. And if there is one really good thing coming out of all of this the past year or two, it's that people beyond the media are thinking about this. I mean, when you have Hollywood stars standing up and saying the media is important, however genuine or not it may be, you have certainly transcended where this debate usually is.
Dennis, go ahead.
I think it's largely political. If you can discredit the messenger, then you discredit the message. And that's what we see going on here. But as Eric hinted at, that's not entirely new. Politicians, as far back as there have been politicians and media, they have sought to cast questions upon what we do because they don't want us asking questions.
Right.
So they try to discredit the messenger.
Dennis emails, the problem is that the masses do not know how to differentiate between opinion and news. The Observer even calls its opinion page, are you ready for this? Opinion. I'm looking at it now.
It's great.
It's much more difficult to differentiate on TV, and that is true. Gary emails, my definition of fake news is when you only give one side of the story. Major news outlets are guilty of this, including NPR, Fox, CNN, etc. You can give facts all day, but if you only give certain facts, that's fake news, in my opinion. All right, let's talk about that, because our name came up in it. NPR came up in it. How often are we guilty of only giving one side of the story? In your opinion, David, since you work for the newsroom here.
All right, racking my brain here. I mean, there are, you know, we have different kinds of news on our on the station every day. We have hourly headlines, for example. When something breaks, we report what just happened. Is there another side to the story? You know, in a three-sentence news item, we're going to tell you what just happened. We're not going to tell you all the background on it. When we do a longer story on our morning or evening newscasts, I think part of our job is to get at all the angles on the story. And, you know, we do try to do that. I have conversations with my editors all the time. You know, what about this? And we try to make sure we include that. Do we miss it sometimes? I suppose we do. But our goal, at least in the longer coverage that has more analysis to it, is to include all aspects of the story.
And is part of the problem here, and this has become a problem now for newspapers, because it didn't used to be. You used to have deadlines. You put the paper to bed. You put it out in the morning. You put it out in the afternoon. It was what it was. But in the new world, where everything is digital and it's always being updated, you've become a television and a radio station, where we're reporting on unfolding news as it happens, and you do not have all the facts at any given time.
Can I just say yes 1,000 times before you even get the question finished?
Is that part of the problem? People think we're lying to them because we don't tell them everything, because we don't know everything yet.
We are all struggling with this mightily, and speed has always been an issue in media, but now it's just gone into the stratosphere. And so I think a lot of us are trying to balance those things constantly. You want to be out there with breaking news as quickly as you can be. You also want to make sure that you have all those facts buttoned up. And a lot of times things are changing rapidly. The accounts are changing rapidly. So absolutely that is a complicating factor, I think, for just about everyone.
And we put a fact out that turns out not to be a fact. Not through no fault of our own.
Right.
But
and
hopefully we correct those.
Correct. That is a key point.
But you may
point.
Not hear or see the correction.
Yeah. But I think, Glenn, that is a key point. When we're talking about media and legitimacy, one of the things I think that really differentiates is the fact that a media organization is willing to correct what it got wrong, to let people know, hey, we didn't have this right. This is what it actually is. That tells you right there, sends a signal that nobody's trying to trick you. We're trying to get the most accurate version of the news as we have it.
Glenn.
The other thing we have to be honest about is that news is generated by humans. We go out and we interview people and we come back to the newsroom and we write those stories. We have a plethora of quotes we can use. Which quotes do we use? Who do we quote first? How do we fashion the lead? How do we fashion the nut graph? There are ways.
What's a nut graph for those who don't know?
That's kind of the heart of the matter. Yeah,
right?
That's kind of the heart of the matter. The graph that tells the reader why it's important.
Right.
But so there are subtle ways that bias can slip into our into that final product. What we have to do, as David said, I think we have to be honest about that, and we have to guard against it. We have to read those stories that we write, and we have to look at them and say, okay, am I being fair to all concerned? And try as we might, we're never going to be perfect at that, because for every quote we put in, we've left 30 quotes out of it.
Sherry, you say it's important to, and this is a quote, differentiate between truly fake news and fake news accusations levied against those who deliver stories a reader disagrees with. How do you do that when, for most people, perception is reality?
Well, you know, to double back on what everybody is saying here is, as a consumer, when you decide what news organizations you're going to trust and who you're going to read regularly and how you perceive that news organization, the range of standards between this news outlet and this outlet are enormous. In an organization like The Observer, there are multiple layers of editing. It is absolutely our standard that never should speed trump accuracy or fairness. And you have to drive a stake in the ground and say, this is what we absolutely believe. So even though there's huge pressure to be fast and be immediate, if you say that this is our standard and you talk about it over and over in the newsroom to say, we don't want to get out there first if it's not right. Also, the idea of transparency, you know, it's not new, but I think it's as important as ever to be as transparent as we can. And I think
Do you do that?
There's multiple ways to do that. And one is correct your mistakes. Acknowledge and correct your mistakes. Primarily today, that's digital stories. And it used to be easier to miss a print correction, but it's right there in the story. The story's corrected. There's a note on it. In digital, you can see the correction and the update. The other thing I think you see more and more now is a story that says, here's what we know and don't know on this breaking story. Be clear with what we don't know yet, and we're still chasing that. But to say, at this moment, here's what we have, here's what we don't have, and here's what we're checking on. But I think there are ways to really increase our transparency with if I go to a meeting and I write a meeting story as a reporter, there's a difference in bias and perception, and I am writing that story of my perception of what happened in that meeting.
Right.
If I write that story and I link to here's where you can go watch the video, or here's a transcript, or here's an actual document that was released in that meeting, it gives a reader an opportunity, if they choose to take that step in that time, to say, I'm going to look at this. Well, you know, I don't perceive that person's statement the way you did, but it's to give people the opportunity to say, check my work.
Yeah, see it for yourself. The Columbia Journalism Review did a study of this in the opposite direction. They did it from the bottom up to look at how news consumers define and regard fake news. And news consumers don't see this as black and white. They don't see a stark separation between fake news and real journalism. This is very troubling. It's a matter of degree. While they, and this is a quote from the study, they associate fake news with stories circulating online, and especially in social media, they placed more emphasis on journalists and politicians as purveyors of fake news. And further, they associate the term with superficial, inaccurate, and sensationalist reporting. Everybody at this table is going to say, we don't do this, and we don't have a TV person at the table. And I think TV is probably guilty of this in the way they tease the stories that they're about to broadcast. If you watch any network news or even any local news, sometimes they'll show you this piece of video over and over with this provocative headline to make you stay until they actually get to the story. And when they get to the story, it doesn't turn out to be what they purported it to be, which kept you watching, which ticks you off, first of all. But secondly, gives you the impression that it's fake. Are we shooting ourselves in the foot? Do newspapers do that too? Because they want to get click-throughs on their, particularly on their digital side. I'm just asking.
Yeah, well, we're still finding our way. This is still relatively new to us as an organization. In other words, you know, 200 years of practices that are changing dramatically in the last 5 years, and we do a lot of training in-house on what is a fair headline and what is a clickbait headline, and change headlines frequently in flight if we find that they're not doing what they need to do. But I think it's still a learning curve. And, yes, a legitimate news organization cares, because somebody's going to do that a news outlet's going to do that 3 or 4 times, and suddenly their credibility with that particular reader is shot. So there's a lot at stake to make sure you're being fair, you're accurately selling a headline. But, yes, you actually have to get people to click on that headline to read the story. So it's really, I think, finding the balance between what piques your interest but what is really fair and doesn't oversell what you're coming to read as a reader.
I mean, we have to pay for our news, and that means we need people to read the articles. Having run a local news network for 9 years, I can tell you they don't click and read through on the story about the town board meeting. Unless you do something crazy with the headline. They will read the story about the bad auto accident or the murder case.
We're talking about how local news deals with fake news allegations here on WFAE Today. Barry emails, the days when the nation accepted newspapers and TV news as truth are gone, because we no longer have a fixed or shared sense of truth anymore. Fake news will continue to reflect distrustful factions of the nation until our culture returns to a unified worldview. I'm not sure we ever had a unified worldview.
those were the days.
And I would think nobody at this table, although I'm sure there are people who go to work in these news organizations, in these alleged news organizations, that do go to work to purposefully mislead or put across a point of view. But I don't think that we or anybody at this table does that. Please tell me you don't.
I think Barry raises an interesting point. One of the, you know, he says that there's not one version of the truth anymore, basically.
Right.
One of the things that's changed is that we like a newspaper, for example, used to be the mass media outlet in a given city. The Observer used to have, you know, 75, 80, 90% penetration. Newspapers in general, people got two of them at home. Now it's under 20%, under 10% in a lot of places. The newspaper is no longer the shared page that we're all on. I think that has shifted over to TV. And, you know, TV is a different kind of a news medium for that. I think we have to fight against that. I mean, you know, if TV puts stories out there and does sensational things to try and get people to watch the stories, that we're in that. We're stuck in that predicament.
Well, I think the other thing is we have a tendency to say doom and gloom, things were so much better way back when. But remember, we have much greater diversity of opinion and news than we've ever had before. We hear different voices. We hear different topics. There are a lot of benefits to this. It's not all, yes, these things are very troubling and it's difficult to combat. But on the flip side, you can find all kinds of things that you never would have been exposed to in
my
the past.
My point is it's not all on one platform,
right,
where somebody picks
right
it up in the morning and they get that, you know, that diversity that is in there.
But I'm going to tell you that it is all on one platform, and that's the problem. We're going to come back in a minute, and we're going to talk about the toaster. What has that got to do with news? You'll find out. It's Charlotte Talks.
That was one of those teases.
That's right. That's one of those teases. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Lit, a nonprofit literary arts center offering craft classes for writers and literary explorations for everyone. Details and registration at charlottelit.org. And Tom Bush Law Group, a family law practice representing clients in areas such as divorce, child custody, mediation, and other family law matters. Serving Charlotte for over 30 years, tombushlaw.com. President Trump lays out his plan to boost agriculture and prosperity in rural America. What's at stake is more than a hill of beans, and they'll be talking about that in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on Point. Our conversation continues tonight at 7 o'clock at the Levine Museum. Nothing fake about it. Responsible reporting in a new media world features a panel of local journalists, including our own Lisa Wharf, moderated by Ann Calkins, a publisher of the Charlotte Observer, and several other journalists of note. You can get details at our website, wfae.org/charlottetalks.
The new year brings new opportunities, opportunities to stay in step with a changing world.
These are the largest demonstrations in Iran in nearly a decade.
Opportunities to learn.
But the main reason for the surge has to do with global economic conditions.
And opportunities to be surprised.
Drink has Kahlua, chocolate syrup, and red Kool-Aid.
All you have to do is listen to Morning Edition every day with Marshall Terry, beginning at 5 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. We're talking about fake news, the proliferation of it, how it's impacted local news, etc., with David Borax, reporter for WFAE News, Glenn Birkins, the editor and publisher of QCityMetro.com, Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, and Sherry Chisenhall, executive editor and vice president of news at the Charlotte Observer. Pass the butter, Eric.
Yes, you were making toast.
That's right. Time to talk about the toaster. Yes. One of you just said we don't have a platform. The newspaper's not on a platform, a separate platform. And that is, there's a sense of place when the newspaper is delivered to your doorstep, and what's in that publication is the Charlotte Observer or the News and Courier or whatever it is. It is that publication. But when you're reading the Charlotte Observer or the New York Times on your computer, it's a click of a button to get to Breitbart. It's a click of a button to get to MSNBC's website. It's a click of a button to get to Fox. It's all coming in on the same appliance. The same television set that brings you CBS News is also bringing you Entertainment Tonight. And everybody sees it as one thing. As a matter of fact, when I used to work at WBTV, somebody called me up and asked to speak to somebody who clearly was the anchor at Channel 9. And I said, he doesn't work here. He works at Channel 9. And they said, well, it's the same company, isn't it? No.
Well, yes.
They don't see a difference.
Look, we can talk about the Darwin Awards, but there are, you know, there are differences in discernment when it comes to viewers and readers, and I think there are plenty of very astute readers and consumers of media. Not all, but, you know, we're all just people, and we're trying to figure this out. I mean, yes, that's true, but your second example, the TV, how long has TV been around now? I mean, a long time. So I don't know that we can blame the computer any more than we can blame the TV. We have to blame ourselves. I will say, though, that I think one of the amazing and frightening problems out there is when you look at something like Facebook, when people are passing along stories of same thing, varying qualities. And, you know, it was only 2 years ago that Mark Zuckerberg said it would be pretty crazy to think that that was impacting an election. And within a year, they were hiring fact-checking organizations to try and help them sort some of this out. So, yes, it is complicated and confusing, but it's not impossible to figure this out.
Glenn.
The other thing that I would say is that the internet has changed how we read. If you can, most readers click on a website and they might read that one story and then they're gone. Or if we're lucky, they, you know, maybe two, or if we're really lucky, three before they leave. When you pick up a newspaper, you're flipping through it. You're consuming much more news, and you get a better feel for that publication than you do when you just go and click on one story and read it, and then you're gone to wherever else you're going on the internet. So I think that has hurt perception as well, because people are just bouncing in and out.
Do apps make a difference?
Well, I think what makes a difference is two things. Stories, people are not coming to your website for the most part and choosing to click something. They're coming in through a link on Facebook, or they've searched on Google and they click that link to take them to what they're looking for.
Right.
Often, I think it's very true, people don't know where they've gone and they don't have a feel for what that organization is. I mean, I get things sent to me all the time, at least once every couple weeks, it says, the mainstream media, you'll never read the story. And they have literally sent me a Washington Post story.
Right.
It said that the mainstream media will never cover that. So I think it's very easy, and they're reading it not on their desktop, but on their phone, a relatively small screen. They see something in their Facebook feed. They tap it because it's interesting. And often I find myself like, where am I and what is this website? I know nothing about it. And that starts for me to impact the legitimacy of a story. But I think the news consumers are here and they're here. And, you know, are you a highly careful news consumer, or are you just scrolling through social media or search? and you don't necessarily weigh carefully what you're reading.
Eric emails, not our okay. Eric, another Eric with a C. Social media has helped to create closed loop bubbles of information sharing where people will continue to have their own opinions on events reinforced when an actual news organization reports facts that conflict with what a person has continually reinforced them from their own networks. It's easy for them to dismiss that as fake. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, it's interesting. There's a book that I think is out in January by a Syracuse political scientist. And obviously there's a lot written about misinformation in this era. But she did and I'm sorry that I can't remember her name, but she just did an interview before the end of the year with Vox. And, you know, basically she said really political information may be the least harmful disinformation because if it's not cognizant with what you believe, it doesn't change your mind anyway. Right. That really more harmful is when, you know, somebody is attacking another company and saying their products kill your dog. And in fact, that's not true. And, you know, that if misinformation causes you to change a behavior, then it's far more harmful than if it just is not dissonant with your current beliefs.
One of the criticisms leveled by the president against the mainstream media outlets that he calls fake is their use of unnamed sources. How prevalent is that in local news, Sherry?
I think less than before, but it's still important if it means getting important information out. So I think, you know, the important thing is we have standards for doing that. We don't produce local stories with anonymous sources if I don't know who they are and if we haven't talked about that. What do we know about that person? What are their potential motivations?
But how are people to trust that? I mean, why should readers, viewers, listeners believe that what you're telling them is legitimate if it's coming from a source that you will not name? Why should we believe that there's a foundation of fact for that? How do they know that we're just not making it up?
Well, it's one of the reasons we do this far less because it is inherently suspect to a reader. I look back at the stories we did reporting on the health department, and we had to be convinced that there was no way that we were going to get an important story and that the people giving us information, we know a lot about who they are and why what they're giving us, and we vet it through other sources.
Yes, and let me just ask this question. Of all the people sitting at this table who have used or worked in newsrooms that have used unnamed sources, how many times has it been proven later on that what the unnamed source has told you is not true, and therefore you misled your readers, your listeners, your viewers?
I would say rarely. It has happened, but rarely. Typically, at the papers I've worked with, they've required unnamed sources, at least three people verifying that fact. It does happen, but not that often.
Here's something that occurred to me yesterday, and maybe I'm just I'm overthinking this, but it seems to me that if you have a newspaper, it costs a lot of money to start a newspaper. You have a lot of money invested in talent. It used to be in printing presses. I'm sure that's all outsourced now, but nonetheless, you got to pay the press. You got to pay for the paper. You got to pay for the delivery. There's a lot of money there. If you want to start a radio station, you got to buy this thing right here, among other things. You want to run a television station, you got to buy cameras and lights and switchers, and it costs a fortune to do this. So if you're going to do news on those entities, it seems to me that you need to protect your investment. There would be a desire to protect your investment by putting out authoritative, truthful information. Today, people are getting their news from blogs, from Facebook, from podcasts that are cheap to produce. They have no skin in the game. Why would you believe them over a mainstream outlet that has all this investment infrastructure? Why would you? Am I just overthinking this?
Well, no. I mean, and first, we don't outsource our printing. We own our printing press.
Okay,
so
fact we outsource check. Ours, just so you know. Yeah.
Fact check that.
Transparency.
Yeah. It has been a great improvement in some ways that the barrier to entry to have your voice heard is so low now because it has increased the voices. If you think you have something to say, if you think you have journalism you want to do, you can do that. And so there's a great benefit to that because it has absolutely created a plurality of voices and perspectives. You know, but the downside is it puts a pressure on the consumer who may not want to do research on what he or she is reading. I mean, you take – I think it's a, there's actually research that says it's a less than 2-second decision to share something on Facebook. That is not somebody who wants to take 20 minutes to say, well, I've never heard of this person who writes this one-person website.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to share it anyway because it's interesting. So a lot comes back to pressure on a news consumer who doesn't necessarily want to be a researcher on their media. So I think, you know, every coin has two sides. And while I think there's been huge benefit to democratizing the ability for people to have their voice heard, it does create a pressure to know what you're reading and what do you know of the person or outlet you're reading.
The downside, I mean, I think of the former Davidson College quarterback who was a legislative aide in Maryland, and he simply made up a story, found a picture from England of boxes stacked up that said ballot box on them and said that these were illegal votes in Ohio that were placed for Hillary Clinton. It was distributed, I think, 6 million times.
Right. He actually ran a business around that, though.
Right.
So is my second definition of fake news, when people are doing this on purpose.
But that – I agree with you, but the problem is people a lot of times are not differentiating because – you know, they're going through this so quickly.
And before we start putting all the blame on people not differentiating and not being media literate, let me ask you this question. And I know this has nothing to do with local. This is all national. How harmful is it that MSNBC, which is clearly to the left, uses the resources and the reporters of NBC News on their talk shows at night, whether or not those reporters give their opinion or do, even if they don't give anything but the facts, how harmful is it? How does that blur the line, muddy the wall? How harmful is it that Meet the Press, which is the longest running show on television and is has been trusted by both sides, left and right, on the Sunday show? But now Meet the Press is on every day on MSNBC, surrounded by these other shows that are opinion-based and are speculated-based, et cetera. How harmful is that? How difficult? How do we trust any of it?
Well, I think it certainly creates headaches, and it confirms for people who are skeptical what they already believe. So I think it's very much a business decision for NBC and Comcast. Is that trade-off worth it? And, you know, ultimately, I think some people are going to hate this answer, but ultimately it comes out in the wash in terms of, you know, are people still watching you, believing you? And I'm talking about in a general broad basis. And if all of a sudden people aren't paying any attention to what you're doing and they're not advertising with you, then you know you've probably lost
your way. But it's not just about money, and it's not just about their money. It's about you. It's about everybody at this table.
So a reporter going on a talk show, is that a good thing or a bad thing for a news organization? I mean, I think it depends on the reporter. And we need to, going back to what I said earlier, we need to stick to our principles and our standards that we've always had. I mean, should I go on the Friday News Roundup on WFAE and answer questions from Mike? There are times when he's asked a question that's kind of an opinion question, and I will back off a little bit and I'll stick to the facts on it. I think we need to do that to preserve our own integrity as reporters. You know, if you are a reporter who gets in that situation and you let yourself go, I think that's a problem.
Glenn, you reminded me of a Thomas Jefferson quote. He said, "Were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter." Most Americans cherish the words Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence. Why don't we cling to that quote?
Because we often...
Everyone at this table is clinging to it.
Yes.
And our families.
We as journalists often deliver news that people don't want to hear. And that saying, blame the messenger, it's there for a reason. Mm-hmm. No one likes someone who brings them news they don't want to hear or they disagree with or whatever. But it's what we do, and we can't stop doing that simply because readers are having a visceral reaction. I do think we have to be more transparent. I think we have to try even harder when we talk about going on talk shows or reporters going on NBC reporters going on MSNBC. We have to find a way to let the reader know this is opinion. This is news. We've got to be better at that.
We're talking about fake news on WFAE's Charlotte Talks. The problem with fake allegations of fake news being put out by various people around the country and pointed at mainstream media outlets, is it's very difficult to prove a negative. It's easy to make the allegation, ah, fake news. It's much difficult for you to say, no, it's not. It's real. How do you combat it?
I mean, we need to be better advocates for our own work, I think. You know, if we have a story that's true and it's out there and somebody says it's fake news, we've seen some major news outlets do this recently with reports that have been labeled fake news from on high. New York Times, Washington Post, they'll put out another story that says, actually, no, it's not. And let's go back to the interview and here's what this person said. They'll reiterate the facts that they had and say we stand by them. I think we need to be better advocates for ourselves in an era when many of our readers, listeners are trained to question everything we do. I think it's much harder to be a reporter these days.
Well, and I think one point that was made that was really good is the idea of when you're reporting online, being able to include documents, transcripts, meeting agendas, those kinds of things that show, hey, look, this really happened. This is not just something that was created out of thin air.
Don't believe me?
Here were the
Go
steps.
Look for it.
And, right. And here video, are the mechanics
and,
of it.
And videotape
yes.
has come to be very valuable right. in this world.
This is really comes down to an issue of show your work. That,
yeah.
that we have to step up our ability to show our work and say, here's what we've done. I mean, I want to be clear that I'm not saying at all that we blame news consumers. I just think it's harder than ever to differentiate as a news consumer. And I think the more we can show our work, be transparent, offer original documents, link to something that you can see for yourself, it helps us.
Julie on Facebook, we only have 45 seconds left, but Julie on Facebook says, I don't think the problem is solely how a story is reported so much as it is which stories are reported. And that's a whole other show, how stories are chosen and the order that they're chosen to be put in a newscast or how they appear on a print publication, etc.
Toasters, part two.
Is this a situation of this too shall pass, do you think?
I hope so.
Well,
quickly.
Fake news is the old you're biased, so probably not.
Okay. Sherry Chisenhall with the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg, Charlotte Business Journal, Glenn Birkins, QCityMetro.com, and David Borax with WFAE News. I hope none of you have been tarnished by your appearance here today. Thank you.